Now, I'm going to preface what I'm going to say because I'm going to talk about the military for a minute, because I know if I talk about the military, the different branches, then I'm usually schooled afterward. Because I made the mistake a couple weeks ago of calling a Marine a soldier. Major mistake. Because we have Marines here. Who educated me after the service? I was like surrounded, you know? Sir, we don't call them soldiers. Like, you got a gun, you go into battle. I'm thinking as a layman, you're a soldier. No, sir, we are Marines. Are there Marines here right now? Yeah, am I right? I mean, you're called Marines. Yes. Not soldiers. Okay, so we're good. So what I'm going to say, just don't take issue with this, okay? All right? The United States Army is what we want to talk about. Sorry about the Marines, the Air Force, the Navy, Space Force, and Coast Guard. I think I covered them all. We're going to talk about the Army. And I know what I'm going to say applies to the other branches, but just go with what I'm going to say. Show some grace, all right? No one is going to show me grace. Thank you so much. So the Army has a concept called a battle buddy. Yeah, so I'm already thinking the Navy's going, well, we don't have battle buddies. I know. My dad was in the Navy. So what does the Navy have? No, that's the Air Force. Air Force has wingmen. So you're fighting church split here in the service right here. Okay, so Navy has shipmates. But you guys are pilots, so. Wingman. So you could have a wingman, but that could be Air Force. I don't know, what does Space Force have? They are still contemplating. Okay, back to reality. Okay, so I've covered all my bases. No side conversations after the service, all right? So, battle buddy, U.S. Army, right? So what is a battle buddy? So what did I do? I typed in battle buddy to search AI domain. I got a definition. You tell me if this definition is correct. Here's what AI told me. It refers to an assigned or trusted buddy who is responsible for assisting, protecting, and caring for their fellow buddy both in and out of combat. Good? Yeah. That's good. Yeah, that's what a battle buddy is. And I would say, yeah, because I looked at the sources it was drawing from, and I went to those sources knowing that you'll probably fact-check this, knowing the church that this is. That's what it is. That's a battle buddy. Who wouldn't want one of those? Because this is what I think makes our military so great. It's built around the concept of a battle buddy. Someone who basically, from our vernacular, got your back. Because in the chaos of battle, combat, whatever it would be, to have somebody that's got your back, you can't even put a price tag on that. A battle buddy. They're good when you're in combat, outside of combat. They are there for you. And who better to go to than somebody that knows you, what you've been through. You can relate to them. You can have a conversation with them. They get you. That's a battle buddy. Who understood this concept better than Paul? Paul was a spiritual warrior, but he had a lot of battle buddies, people that stood alongside him. So Paul could have served by himself. He was such a great speaker and thinker. But from the very beginning he got saved, he started gathering people around him to do the work of spreading the gospel through people. And that's exactly what he did. He's going to close out the book of Colossians by listing 10 people that were his battle buddies, 10 of them by name. But when you look at his other books, he spends a lot of time talking about different people that were in his life. So, case in point, how many books did Paul write? It's a trivia question. Excellent, 13. How many books in the New Testament? 27. How do we know that? New has three letters, Testament has nine. 9 times 3 is 27, right? How many books are in the Old Testament? Old has three letters, Testament has nine. There's 39 books in the Old Testament, right? So Paul wrote 13 of the 27 books. How many of those books did he talk about battle buddies? Eight. Romans 16, he talks about scholars' debate on how you divide the names up. Between 26 to 28 battle buddies at the end of the book of Romans. 1 Corinthians 16, as he closes out that book, he talks about two spiritual battle buddies. It was a husband and wife couple, Aquila and Priscilla. He loved to hang in with them. Philippians chapter 4 mentions various saints from the house of Caesar. At the last service, I said Caesar's salad, and I lost the church for a few seconds. So you try doing this job. So he had saints in, didn't name them, but saints in the household of Caesar. Imagine. And that's in our church today. We have people in our church all throughout various forms of our government and military, do we not? We do. And so Paul said, we've got saints in the household of Caesar himself. 2 Timothy chapter 4, he mentions Aquila and Priscilla again. Titus chapter 3, he lists four great men that impacted him as part of his ministry. Philemon only has one chapter. He talks about five brave men who served alongside of him. And then in Ephesians 6, as he closes out the letter to the Ephesian church, he talks about a man from Asia Minor named Tychius. Those are his battle buddies, which makes you stop and ask the question, personal question, who is your battle buddy in the faith? Who is that person that comes alongside you and helps you walk like Christ and look like Christ, holds you accountable, is there with you in the fight, the spiritual battle? So who's your battle buddies? When we look at chapter 4, Colossians verses 7 through 18, we're going to look at this particular motif, this theme. It pops up in this particular passage, that your battle buddies do two things. They help you grow up in the faith, and they help you go. And we have a chart concerning this. Or did the screen go out? No, there it is. Praise God, we still have a screen. I still do not understand how Charles Spurgeon preached in the 1800s. So battle buddies help you do what? Grow spiritually and go forth with the gospel because they're with you. So it's a lot better to do life and ministry with other people. And he's going to talk about 10 people as he closes out the book of Colossians that impacted his life. So you must ask yourself, who are my 10? Now, I can say, I mean, I've had more than 10 in my lifetime because I became a believer back in 1967. So I have a lot of battle buddies in my life. Some of them have gone home to be with Christ, and the Lord has replaced them many times over in my life. And so who are your 10 like right now? So he's going to list 10. And from these 10 that we're going to analyze, we can learn much about what a battle buddy is like in the faith. His first one has a very strange name. His name is Tychicus. It's Tychius. I'm going, they probably called him Ty. I'm just saying. Really, I've got my Greek text up here. His name in Greek is Tychicus, a little easier in Greek. But Tychicus in English, we're going to go with that. Because he says in verse 7, as he closes out his letter, as to all of my affairs, because he's in prison under house arrest with the Roman guard 24-7 chained to him. He says, as to all my affairs, Tychicus, our beloved brother and faithful servant and fellow bondservant in the Lord, he's going to bring you some information about my situation, Paul says. For I have sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know about our circumstances, that he may encourage your hearts. So the church in Colossae in Asia Minor is thinking, what's going on with the Apostle Paul? I mean, this great man of God, we heard he's under house arrest in Rome. Nero, what's he doing with, what's going on? Are they going to kill him? I mean, they're torturing him. Like, what's going on? And so Paul says, I've sent a letter to you, the book of Colossians. I sent it by the hand of a man named Tychicus, and he's going to let you know through this letter, I'm doing great. I'm doing fine. What do we learn about this man? Well, three things. Paul calls him a beloved brother, a faithful servant, and a fellow bond servant in the Lord. Three things about this battle buddy. From Acts chapter 20 and Paul's missionary journeys, verse 4, we learn that he came from Asia Minor, which is our modern day version of Turkey. He came from that area. So for him to go back to Colossae with the letter of Colossians to give unto them, he's going home. So when Paul says they're in Rome and he tells Tychicus, could you please leave, take this letter I've written, this scroll to the church in Colossae, Tychicus is going, oh yeah, I'll gladly do it. And I know lots of people in Asia Minor, maybe I can see the family, friends, etc. So he leaves. But to go that far was no easy trip. How far do you have to go? 1,180 miles. Did he call Southwest or United? And no. If Paul tells you, hey brother, I need something for you to do. He's not telling you, could you go across town to another church in Rome and talk to them about me? He says, no, I need you to leave Italy. And I need you to go back to Colossae. Like, Paul, that's 1,180 miles. I'll do it. How do you get there? By boat. And there's various means he could have done it. I mean, they could have sailed from the port on the western shore of Italy and left and gone down past Sicily and gone past Malta and headed over to Crete, maybe parked there for a while, replenish their supplies, and then take the ship all the way over to the coastland of Ephesus and got off there in Ephesus and then taken a 120-mile journey, probably by foot. They didn't call Ubers. You get off the ship and it's like, there you are in sandals, tunic, and you got a 120-mile trek to get to Colossae. And he says, Paul, I'll do that. That's some kind of friend, isn't it? And he didn't just take the book of Colossians with him. He took the other prison epistles, like Philippians, like Ephesians. And according to Colossians 4, verse 6, there was another letter that was lost that we don't have today. It was called the letter to the Laodicean church, which Laodicea was right next to Colossae, along with Hierapolis. They're all similar cities there. And so he says to this man, please go on a mission for me to let the church know that I'm doing okay. And by the same token, I need to attack a false theology that's attacking their church. And so it went by the name of this man, Tychicus. He was also one of the seven men who accompanied Paul on his final trip to Jerusalem when he's arrested for causing a disturbance on the Temple Mount. And then they eventually ship him over by armed guard over to Caesarea, the coastal city in Israel. He's under house arrest there for 2 years under the Romans protecting him there until they send him to Rome. Tychicus is the one who hangs with him. Would you hang with a friend who kept getting arrested or kept having stuff happen to him wherever he showed up? Well, Tychicus is like, I'm not leaving you, Paul. And that's the kind of man that he was. Who doesn't need a battle buddy like that? He leaned on Paul and Paul leaned on him. His life, there's not a whole lot said specifically about him other than he took this letter over to the church to give to them. But that might seem like an insignificant task, but that tells us he was a servant of God who did the insignificant thing, but it had significant ramifications. Why? This little letter not only impacted that church, you're still studying it thousands of years later. So translated, that obscure thing that you do as a battle buddy for the kingdom of God is not obscure in God's mind. It might echo down the halls of time because God looks at that obscure thing you did as a great thing. You have a battle buddy named Tychicus or Ty. Battle buddy number two, another strange name. How do you say that name? Oh, I just skipped these things when I'm reading. With him, with Tychicus, was also a guy named Onesimus. Who's he? Well, he's our faithful and beloved brother who is one of your number. He's from their church. Oh, yeah, we know Onesimus. And they will inform you, Tychicus and Onesimus, about the whole situation here. They'll tell you what's going on with my imprisonment. So Onesimus, who's he? Well, he is the slave who left his slave owner, Philemon, who went to the church in Colossae. He left, but when he left, he stole from him, and then he got out of Dodge with the stuff he stole, and he went all the way to Italy, as far away as he could get from his owner, Philemon, with what he had stolen. And he just happened to, in the city of Rome, run into a man named Paul. Do you think that was by accident? Think not. See, whenever you are, because he wasn't a believer when he did this, and so he's running to get away from prosecution, et cetera. Thinks he can hide in Rome, and God's like, I see you. I see exactly where you are. And I don't know what your first question is in heaven. I would kind of like to know when I see Onesimus, when I get a chance, because you have eternity to talk to all these people. Is when you see him, it's like, hey, could you explain to me exactly how did you meet Paul? He was under house arrest, chained to a Roman guard. How did you happen to run into him? Who knows? Ask him when you see him. But somehow he ran into Paul. And according to Philemon, which is only one chapter, Paul says in verses 10 to 11, I led him to Christ. He got saved. And all of a sudden, he who is a physical slave and a spiritual slave is now a free man in Jesus Christ. And so Paul is looking at this great man, and he's telling him, he's going to come back to your church. Well, that's a big thing for Onesimus to do, because when he left, it wasn't under good terms, because he left as he ripped off Philemon. But Paul says, no, he's saved now. Notice he calls him two names, our faithful and beloved brother, our faithful and beloved brother. He doesn't say, oh yeah, you know Onesimus, that bum that ripped off Philemon and took his money, ATM card and everything, and you know, left. No, he didn't even talk about the past, because according to Paul, when you are saved, your slate is clean. You're clean before God. He doesn't think about your old life anymore. He says now he's a faithful saint. So accept him back into your body. I'm sending him back. Because when you get saved, it radically changes you altogether. I have to ask you, do you have a Christian in your life, a battle buddy, who has a sordid past? Now, last church just sat there and nobody said anything. And then I asked it again and then everybody's like, yeah. So since you were really quiet, I'll ask you again. And you can respond to this with a yes or a no. Do you have a Christian in your life, have you had, who's had a very checkered past before they got saved? Yeah, me too. Yeah. I've had friends who put people in prison. I've had friends in prison. I've had all kinds of friends. But Christ changes them. And he changed Onesimus. See, my best friend spent half his life in San Quentin. His name was Alan Reasoner. And I met him when I first got married. And when he got out of San Quentin, I got him a job working in the landscape company with me. I spent every day in a truck with Alan Reasoner, tattooed down, big buff, blonde-haired, bleach blonde American, California guy, tattoos everywhere, demons and skulls and everything on him. I mean, that became my best friend, Alan. And then God took him home in a motorcycle wreck. But here my dad's a federal agent, and my best friend spent half his life in San Quentin. But he came to know Jesus in San Quentin, so he's like Onesimus. And then our lives were connected before I went to seminary, and Alan impacted my life. I impacted his life. He was my battle buddy till Lord took him home. You have a friend like that? Thank God for that kind of friend, because they can teach you stuff. One day, Alan, and I have probably told you this, but if you're new, I got to tell you again. So if you've been here a while, just go with it, okay? We're in our work truck one day, and I've had people stop our work truck in the middle of traffic and come over to the window when they saw Alan in the passenger seat. And we'll roll down the window, and they're like, hey, we need some papers, man. And I'm like, well, we don't have any newspapers. We're a landscape truck. Like, no, man, I need some papers. And my friend Alan's like, he's talking about, you know, paper for marijuana, you know? You know, I don't have any of those, man. You know, not anymore. That kind of guy. When you have a friend like that in your life, it really does change your life. He looked at me one day in the truck, and he said, hey, your parents were godly. Your dad was, an elder in the church. You know, your sisters are Christians. That's the kind of home you were raised in. You pretty much been a Christian most of your, since you were a little kid. He said, as for me, look at my life. Convict, tried to kill a guy, attempted murder. I actually drove by a house he shot at, still had the bullet holes in it, trying to kill a guy. He tried to knife another guy. He and a couple guys broke in, knifed another gang member. I mean, he goes down through his whole list of his life, and he looks at me and he says, I understand the grace of God more than you do. I'm like, serious? I have 2 Bible degrees. He just laughed at me. He goes, no, man, I totally understand the grace of God because I really know what he forgave me of. And I'm like, you're probably right, Alan. I never forgot what he told me because they can teach you a lot, those battle buddies. Battle buddy number 3 is a guy named, why aren't these names evil? Aristarchus. Aristarchus, he's my fellow prisoner. He sends you greetings. We'll stop right there. Aristarchus, who's this? On his 3rd missionary journey of the 3 that he took, when he got to Ephesus, he's with this man, Aristarchus. And Aristarchus is there with another man named Gaius. So Gaius, Aristarchus, and Paul. Paul's going to spend 2 years in Ephesus teaching. Now, Ephesus is the epicenter of the temple of Artemis, the fertility goddess. Diana, Artemis, pick a name. She had 2 names. This is a drone shot of Ephesus. And I was there last summer. If you go there, depending on what screen you're looking at, you can see down the bottom corner, you see the water down there? It used to be a coastal city. Now that Caistor River is all sediment, there's no way you can get in there. It's all clogged up. But it used to be able to come in from the Aegean Sea, down the Caistor River, go right to the beautiful city of Ephesus, massive city. And if you took the main drag all the way to that theater, see the theater? That seated 24 to 25,000 people. And if you go to the left of that, you can see off in the corner, the temple structure off to the side. That's the temple of Artemis. It was one of the 7 wonders of the world. It was massive. Everybody worshiped this sex goddess. That's what this city is built around. And I walking down these streets last summer, it was amazing. All the different temples and the polytheism, it was everywhere. And then Paul shows up. I need to talk to you about the true God, Jesus Christ. These other gods are false gods. Well, we know if you read the book of Acts chapter 19 that Paul converted so many people to Christ, they started not buying the products to the goddess Artemis. And this became a problem to the silversmiths because they're starting to lose money because so many Christians are becoming, or so many people are becoming Christians. Have you led so many people to Jesus in your life, it took a hit in people's wallet? And so they whipped the people up into a frenzy, and there's a massive riot of thousands of people, and they happen to grab Aristarchus and Gaius, because they see him, and they know those are Paul's buddies, and they grab them, and it's going to be goners for them with this riotous crowd. At that moment, with that massive theater that I just showed you, Paul is in the vicinity. He hears what happens. He shows up and says, let me go in. They're chanting, great is the goddess Diana, you know? And Paul's like, I could go in. I can debate them all. I can help Aristarchus and Gaius. I can help them. And the other Christians are like, Paul, too dangerous to go in. If you think the Bible is boring, I don't know what book you're reading. That is an amazing man. And Paul says, yeah, I know Aristarchus. He's the guy that was nabbed when we were witnessing for Jesus. And a politician, a city clerk, had to come in and save him. That's Aristarchus. He's a battle buddy of Paul to the core. When he set sail for Rome for his final imprisonment under Nero, guess who was with him? Aristarchus. When the ship crashed, because they left Crete and they're heading to Italy, and they almost made it to Malta, and they hit a huge storm, and the ship is about to sink, and they eventually make it to Malta, but before the ship crashes, they're in heavy seas. I don't know about you, but if I had seasickness, prone to that, and my best friend is getting on a ship to head thousands of miles to Rome, I'm thinking I'm just staying on the shoreline. Aristarchus is like, I'm going with you. I know they don't have Dramamine yet, but I'm going. And I'll go into heavy seas with you. Have you ever been in heavy seas? Is the Navy here? Yes. Is it fun? No, it's not fun. I mean, I've been out deep sea fishing out of San Diego, Santa Cruz, San Francisco, Bodega Bay. I've been out hours off the coast. I can't see land, 25, 30 foot swells. You're trying to hold on, fish with one hand, hold on with the other hand. You want to check your bait, see if you got anything, but you're fishing at 500 feet deep. You can't tell. So you got to let go. Trust God. You don't get swept over. Waves are coming over the boat. Every time I do it, it's like, I should have bought fish at Safeway. And I had a friend that did that and told his wife, we had a great day fishing. Cheesy. And he was a pastor too. Unbelievable. But you would think I'm just going to stay here in Caesarea, enjoy the land. You go off to Nero. Now he's like, I'm going with you. See, a battle buddy watches your back all the way to the end, right? That was Aristarchus. Do you have a friend like that? I have many friends like that. And I want to be a friend like that. A person that doesn't cut and run. Stays right with you. Battle buddy number four, guy named Mark. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, sends you his greeting. Oh yeah, also Barnabas's cousin Mark. And he says parenthetically, well, about whom you have received instructions. If he comes to you, welcome him. So be nice to the guy when he shows up. Who is he? What's his name? Mark. His real name is John Mark. Who's he? Well, who's he related to? It's in English. Barnabas. Who's Barnabas? Son of encouragement. This is Paul's battle buddy. When he went to his first missionary journey, who went with him? Barnabas, John Mark, and Paul. And they took off and they wind up in the southern coastal city and range of Asia Minor, Turkey, Pamphylia. It's known for malaria, marshes, yucky. They're going to have to go through that to mountainous terrain and everything. Somewhere along the line, the three of the battle buddies, Mark's like, I am out of here. I don't want to do this. And he deserts them. Have you ever had a Christian desert you? I have. It's a painful thing. Someone that you thought was going to be Tychius with you till the end, or like Aristarchus, but all of a sudden something happens and this Christian leaves you and deserts you. Doesn't go over well. Paul was not happy with the fact that that Mark was going to do this and then did this. But we see here he's calling him different names. He's looking at John Mark completely different. He's speaking graciously about John Mark, because what happened? Paul forgave him, because he was a battle buddy, but he deserted Paul, and Paul said, wow, you know what? I got to forgive him for doing that, and he forgave him, and we rebuilt that relationship. John Mark went on to do great things, because who do you think wrote the book of Mark? John Mark did. And some scholars theorize, even though it's the shortest of the Gospels, that is the first of the Gospels. And it's very easy Greek to read when you read it in Greek. This forgiven battle buddy went on to do great things for God. Do you have a battle buddy in your life who's deserted you? Maybe you need to forgive him and say, let's restore that relationship, because grace can cover that and help you to get back on track to do great things for God. Battle buddy number five is a guy named Justus. Justus, what a name. Justus. What kind of name is that? Well, it's the name Joshua or Yeshua. That's what it is. Who is he? He's a Jew. It says, and also Jesus. Could you imagine if your name is Jesus? I grew up on the border of Mexico. I had many friends that had this name. And as a child, it really confused me. I'd go to church on Sunday and study Jesus. I'd go to school and I'd run into Jesus. And my Mexican friends are, no, man. It's Jesus. Okay, por qué? I don't know. I mean, you know, Jesus. This guy's name is Jesus, but he's also called Justice. Who is he? Well, he's of the circumcision. What's that mean? That's a code word that he's a Jew. And they, plural, have proved to be an encouragement to me. So who's the they? Well, who's the last guy we just talked about? Aristarchus. So he's saying Aristarchus and John Mark and Justice, also called Jesus, they are of the circumcision. They're Jews. And he says of them, they are the only fellow workers for the kingdom of God who are from the circumcision. So he says there's only these three Jewish converts who are with me right now. Makes you ask the question, what happened to the other Jewish people in the Roman church? Well, when Paul got arrested, they're probably thinking, honey, if you get near Paul, stuff happens. And we can't lose you as a breadwinner, so you need to kind of pull back from Paul. These men did not. Now, raised as Jews, they understood that you had to have fear of God and then maintain the works of the Torah. And all of a sudden, Paul tells them the gospel is, oh no, Jesus fulfills the writings of the Torah and the prophets. He's the true Messiah. And they realized that they needed the salvation of Jesus, and they got saved. And Paul says, when I got arrested and put under house arrest, I had some great men with me, and three of them were great Jewish brothers who walked with the Messiah. You got people like that in your life? That when you're down and depressed, they're right there with you, even though it's going to be costly? He says, they have proved to be an encouragement to me. Now, the word encouragement in Greek, it's not really the word for encouragement. It's the word paragoria. Paragoria is a medical term. And as a medical term, he's pointing to an opium-based medicine that they used at this day and time to alleviate coughs, you know, aches and pains. They use this. What's he say? He says, these men, these Jewish believers, are like a medicine to me. They're like a balm to me. You have to stop and ask yourself, as a battle buddy, am I a medicinal balm to my friends? I mean, do I encourage them? Do I pray for them? Do I build them up? Because he says, that's what these guys did for me, and he thanks God for them. Then he talks about another guy. Who's the other guy that he talks about? Number six is a guy named, another simple name, Epaphras. He says, oh yeah, you know him. He's one of your number. He's from your church. He's a bondslave of Jesus Christ. He sends you his greetings. He's always laboring for you in his prayers earnestly, he says, that you may stand perfect, this is how he prays, and fully assured in all of the will of God. Epaphras, who's he? Well, he's the guy that founded the church in Colossae. How'd that happen? When Paul was in Ephesus for 2 years preaching and teaching, I'm sure that since Colossae was only 120 miles southwest or southeast of Ephesus, he probably took the road up there, ran into Paul, heard his preaching and teaching, and traded kingdoms when he listened to Paul. And when he traded kingdoms, he goes back to Colossae, begins to share his faith. He's so excited. And people start getting saved. And he forms a church. And Paul says, make sure that you remember your pastor is a great pastor. Because why was he in with Paul in Rome? He traveled there to tell Paul, we got a weird belief system infiltrating in our church called Gnosticism, and I don't know how to handle it. It's above my pay grade. Paul, what can I do? And Paul's like, hey, tell me what they're teaching. Let me write you a letter. Epaphras, a great man. What was his spiritual gift? Sharing his faith and praying. A long time ago, I read that if you are not praying, you are playing. I think it's a Southern statement. If you're not praying, you're playing. Epaphras is like, no, I'm a pastor of a church. I pray for my church. You know, it says here that he labored earnestly for you in his prayers. The Greek word for laboring is the word related to agony. This isn't a pastor who said, hallelujah, Jesus, just bless my entire church. Thank you. Amen. That's not how he prayed. It says he agonized. That means he got off alone and he poured over the lives of people and he prayed for them specifically and he had great passion for his church. The greater the pastor prays for his church, the greater the church. May God bless his church with pastors who pray. We have him here. He says, this is a great man of God who stood by me, and I've seen him in action for you. He prays for you specifically that you would, as he says here, be perfect. He doesn't mean morally perfect, it's impossible, but the word is mature in Greek, that you would grow up in the faith. I really have only focused on two things as I have been the pastor here for 18 years. One, that you would come to know Christ as your Savior. And number two, that you would walk to live like him, grow up in the faith. That is all I'm about. And that's what Epaphras was about. Good buddy. About a buddy number seven is a guy we all know. His name is an easy one. Luke, who's he? He works, he's a doctor. Says he's a beloved physician. He sends you his greetings. Luke, a beloved physician. He left his medical practice to go follow Paul around. Imagine, he could have made a whole bunch of money being a doctor. And he's like, no, I'm going to give my life to Paul. And wherever Paul goes, I'm going to go. When you read the book of Acts, you will read, because he wrote the book of Acts, he wrote the book of Luke. He's the only Gentile to write a gospel, Luke. And he follows Paul around on his missionary journeys. And where Paul was, well, there you're going to find Luke starting in Acts chapter 16. You find him there when he mentions that he's there. When Paul traveled back to Jerusalem on his third missionary trip, Luke was with him. When he went to his two-year imprisonment in Caesarea, Luke was with him. When he sailed as a Roman prisoner to Rome, Luke was with him, along with the other men that we've mentioned. This is a good friend, a friend that will not desert you. So he helped Paul emotionally, physically, and spiritually. That's Dr. Luke. You might have a special skill set as a Christian. I have to stop and ask you, are you using it to advance the kingdom of God? Because this is what Luke did. He gave up his practice to do things for God's kingdom. And maybe God would challenge you to do more with your skill set to advance his kingdom, be what it may. He was a great battle buddy. Do you have a Luke in your life? Battle buddy eight is most interesting because nothing's said about him. He says, Luke, he sends greetings. Oh, yeah. And Demas. Would you like to be an afterthought in the mind of Paul? Serious? Yeah. Now, the word italicized also is italicized because it's not in the Greek text. So it's just put in there to make it sound and read easier in English. So he says, Demas. He sends his greetings. What is up with that? Well, Demas was a piece of work. Demas is eventually, when we read Paul's letter to Timothy, 2 Timothy at the end of his life, is going to talk about how Demas, at the end of Paul's life, before he's executed by Nero, is deserted by Christians. And Demas is going to desert Paul. He hadn't yet, but he's going to desert him. And Paul specifically says, Demas has deserted me for love of this present world. Translated, he loves the things of this world too much. Translated, he's a hedonist. He's a materialist. You know, I would think that Paul, as a great leader, probably listened to Demas and probably could figure out, son, you're a materialist. You love the things of the world, not the God of the world. Because you just have to start listening to stuff, like how much your tunic cost. You got special sandals you got off Amazon Prime of the day. No one has sandals like this. Check out the tread. It's unbelievable. My camel, custom, everything, custom, you know. I mean, everything they talk about. I went to a Santana concert the other night. You know Santana? Santana? Orale, yeah. I love Santana. Doobie Brothers were singing. Remember them? They're old. They're really old. When your rock groups don't move on stage anymore, you have arrived. Because no one's going to stand and block your view. It was awesome, but you know, they don't move. Even Santana, Carlos sat down and played the whole night in a chair. I'm like, whoa, what happened to Woodstock, man? You know. But anyway, parked the car, thousands of people going in. We went to a gate, we stood in a long line, and got up there to go through security, and they're like, let's see your tickets, see your tickets. Oh, you can't come in this gate. Like, why not? It's a VIP line. I'm a very important person. No, you're like, sir, you have to go around the building. Your gate's over there. I'm like, everybody's looking at us like, losers, I mean, who are they? You know, but somebody would be saying, because we saw, like, people had their own parking, their name of their company on the signs where they parked their car. We didn't, because we're not very important people. But some people, they live for this, don't? Yeah, when I go to Jiffy Lube, I got assigned parking. I go in the VIP entrance. I've seen pastors kicked out of there before. Yeah, I've seen it. It's unbelievable. It's the love of the world, isn't it? It's the love of the world. And then you get to the concert. Like, where are we? Okay, we're at least under the under the awning, you know. We're not on the hillside. This is good. But wow, look at those people sitting right up in front of the stage. What did those tickets cost? You ever check that out? Like a lot. And I'm watching people go in there going, for them, it's a thing with them. They have got to sit there. It's a prestige thing. I don't care. But some people are, it's the stuff of life. And so I'm sure Paul paid attention to Demas, and it's like, man, the guy loves the world. And boy, did he, because he left Paul when the going got tough. And Paul says, I'll throw him in as an honorable mention. Are you Demas? You love the things of the world too much? I was going to tell you, God will take away the things of the world to you because they don't mean that much, right? They're just stuff of the world. They're there and they're gone. A deer hit my new Volvo SUV Friday night. It's from Satan. Wife and I are driving along, minding our business on Braddock Road. She screams, deer. I knew she wasn't talking to me. I cut the wheel. I see it. It hits the front of the side of the car, bounces off, spins around, bam, takes out the side of my car. My wife tells me, perhaps he just bounced off. Oh, he bounced all right. Yeah, you should see the car. It's a mess. And, you know, I'm like, I'm a super car guy. I'm a major car guy. I park, you know, if you go with me to the restaurant, we park 2 miles away to walk to the restaurant. I mean, I hate car dings. And I like cars. And when God does something like that with an animal, you're just like, the thought that kept racing through my brain as we pulled the car over to see what happened. Job chapter 1. When God removes everything from his life, and then he says, the Lord has given and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of that kept ringing in my head. I didn't tell my wife. She's finding this out right now. But that's ringing in my head. It's like, Marty, it's only a thing. Demas would be going, my life is over. This is unbelievable. It wipes out my resale value. It'll never drive the same, et cetera. Demas, if you're in love with the world, give it up. Focus on heavenly things. Battle buddy number 9 is the only woman mentioned. What's her name? Can you read her name? Nympha. Nympha. Greet her. Why was she a battle buddy? When they needed a church because they didn't have buildings, they needed homes. When they needed a home for the church in Rome, who stepped up? Nympha did. When you agree to have a small group in your house, like a life group, every week, people coming over, you may not even know them. What has to happen in your house before they show up every week? I mean, I'm just thinking. Do you do anything? I mean, you'd have to clean, dust, vacuum, make sure you got the right amount of chairs out. And of course, they're Christians coming over. They're probably Baptist. So they need food. They're going to want to eat something. They're conditioned. They're going to want to drink something, not just water. They got to have something to drink. We got to make sure to drink. And what are we going to do with all the kids that are going to come? Where are we going to put them? And every week, Nympha says, hey, you need a church? My home. That's a woman right there. She's a servant. I'll do the hard thing. I'll let the church in Rome come to my house. And Paul says, man, what a woman. She wasn't afraid to sacrifice. Are you a person who sacrifices like Nympha? Because that's the person who is a great battle buddy. Last battle buddy is a guy named, well, I'm going to call him Archie. Because that's a weird name, huh? Archippus? Archippus. He says to him, take heed to the ministry which you have received in the Lord. Why? That you might fulfill it. Why did he say that to Archie? According to Philemon 2, scholars theorize that Archippus was the son of Philemon, the slave owner, and his mother, Apphia. They theorize that based on this command, that he's like a leader in the Colossian church, like a pastor. But what's this young man thinking about based on the command? I don't want to be a pastor anymore. I don't like the hate emails. I don't like the negative comments. I don't like all the questions. I don't like being in a fishbowl all the time. There's hours. They're calling me all 8 hours of the night with this and that. And I don't want to do it anymore. The dissension, I don't have to handle this and that. I just want to do it anymore. I want somebody else to do it. He's thinking about leaving the ministry. What's Paul tell him? Oh, don't do that. He said, if you are called to the ministry, it's a divine calling. It's not a job. It's a divine calling. Stay at your post until Jesus calls you home. Do you think I've ever wanted to get in my car and drive to infinity and not come back? I'll confess, yeah. In my whole, 40-year pastoral career, there's many times and complexities. I'm like, I am so tired of this. I'm just going to drive, you know, in my last church, I'm going to drive to the Sierras and just disappear in the mountains. But I never did it. Why? Because I was called to shepherd. And a calling from God, you don't walk away from it. So he tells this young man, but you're a shepherd. Be a shepherd. Don't walk away. And the last thing he tells all of the people in Colossae is very kind words to them. He says, I, Paul, wrote this. It's with my own hand. Why do you have to say that? Because he was going blind. He had eye disease called ophthalmia that he contracted in Pamphylia on his first missionary journey. So he can't see. So he authenticates the letter by writing his name, Paulos, for them to understand Paul wrote this letter to authenticate it. And he tells them two things. Number one, remember that I'm chained to a Roman guard, and may grace from Jesus be all over you. What greater thing could you want than for the church to pray for their leader and for the leader to pray grace all over that church, the grace of Jesus? Great little book. We're going to stand and worship God. And if you are a battle buddy, thank God for you. And may he give you great battle buddies in your lifetime.